It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Hayward lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the CLNS post-game coverage show. I am your host, Sam Sheehan. Joining me a little bit later on, we're going to have Andrew Rubino, who's worked with me before. The game we're going to be recapping, folks, not a fun affair, but you know, here at CLNS post-game show, we cover the games, whether they win or not. They've been doing a lot more winning recently, but you're always going to have a bad night when Donovan Mitchell puts 17-9-3 on you. And the score of that game, that was the Utah Jazz coming into Boston, getting their first win in a long time, 107-95. Before we really get into the show here tonight, I want to talk about greats.com. They're the sponsor for this episode, and they're the makers of the all-time greats. Classic, stylish, comfortable sneakers, and they're sold at a great price. Greats is Brooklyn's first sneaker company, and they sell all the greats. Classic styles, made the best for less. We got a wide selection of men's and women's shoes, versatile styles, and suitable for any occasion. We got tons of different colors and materials to choose from, and their best sellers include that all-leather Royale lace-up, not with cheese, just the leather Royale. And let me tell you, it's even better than the Royale with cheese. And they've also got the Wooster slip-on. Folks, yeah, I've seen some of my co-hosts from over at the CLNS roundtable, the Celtics roundtable. Those guys, they've seen this Wooster slip on, they've worn it, and it looks great. So what you're going to do, we got something for the audience. You're going to save 15% on your first order when you go, use the offer code Celtics roundtable. That's Celtics roundtable, CelticsRoundTable. And you're going to go to greats.com. That's greats.com. And you enter Celtics roundtable and you're going to save 15% at checkout. Greats, they believe so much in their shoes. There's no risk, no return exchange policy, and they're going to guarantee that you get right in there and you get a fit and style that you love. All right, so now I want to bring in my man, Andrew Rubino, into the pod, co-hosting with me tonight. Andrew, we saw some stuff out there tonight. I got to say, when you see Rudy Gobert go down like 2 minutes into the game with you know, with that injury, I thought, man, this isn't even going to be a fun game. The Celtics are gonna trounce them. But here they are. They're out here, they didn't give up. And they got a lot of help from their bench.
Yeah, Sam, thanks for welcoming me in. And I will say, man, I'm confused on how this went down because I thought it was going to be one of those games that you saw, I want to say a couple weeks back when they played the Magic. No, maybe 3 weeks back when they played the Magic, and it was just an early night, and because for the starters to get out of the game, and Kyrie and them all played well, and it was one of those things tonight. Like all of a sudden, like Rubio is on fire for the Jazz. Mitchell's playing well. Joe Johnson, he didn't play a ton of minutes, but he still like came in and was so efficient and really took it to Marcus Smart a couple times. So not a fun night, like you said, for a Celtics fan or this team.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. You know, we're gonna see. We're gonna hear a lot about bench scoring in this game. Celtics got up over 40% there at the end, 40.7. But you know, you take out Kyrie Irving's 11 for 25 and Al Horford's 9 for 14. And there aren't a lot of buckets left from the rest of the team. The normally effervescent Jason Tatum, 1 for 6. Marcus Smart, it struck midnight. And we're back to pumpkin Marcus Smart here just for this game, 3 for 13. Andrew, let me ask you something. Do you think – we've seen the Celtics – since Marcus Morris went down, and even when they had Marcus Morris in the starting lineup, this is not a new problem for the Celtics. These 8 minute stretches where the bench is just absolutely brutal. Usually it's happening early in the second quarter. We've seen it happen in the third quarter a couple of times. If you're Brad Stevens, what are you looking for? Are you not panicking? Are you trusting your team, or are you looking for to make, you know, some sort of fix while the Celtics are kind of trying to ride out these injury woes, because they've got a brutal schedule coming up, and there's going to be games where Brad is going to try to get some guys some rest. And I'm not sure, you know, who on the bench you're going to trust to make these plays and who you want to empower down the stretch.
I mean, I think the tough thing right now, Sam, is that it looks even worse when tonight you have a combined 13 points from Tatum and Brown, which they usually each give you 13 or more. It just, I think that definitely makes the problem of the bench look even worse when Brown hasn't been playing well as of late. And I don't know if it's something mentally or if he just doesn't feel as good, and he's in his second year and he's having a little bit of a slump and he's kind of tired physically, which I can't really imagine because he trained extremely hard in the off season. But, I mean, Tatum also has been this was one of his by far worst games. I know he had 7 points, but he still just didn't look himself at all. He looked kind of lost out there. So I think personally, Sam, like, I think that the bench is always going to be – the Celtics have that type of bench that they're either going to give you 30 points or 5 points. They're just that type of bench. There's no real consistency. But that type of inconsistency, looks way worse when you have guys like Tatum and Brown. They're usually giving and producing a lot, and especially early on with the 16-game winning streak, and so far they haven't done so. So,
yeah. You know, the Celtics getting ready for, you know, a particularly brutal stretch coming up, 3 and 4 nights. You know, and, you know, I think what struck me was how the Jazz kind of got it done tonight. And we, you know, for as much as I want to, you know, slam the bench and everything like that, you know, you got to kind of tip your cap to the Utah Jazz tonight. I mean, they just, it was a mash unit out there with just, you know, blood all over the floor. I think Favors and Gobert both going down. And, you know, the credit to Jazz. I mean, just absolutely not nonplussed. Like, just, you saw old friend Jonas Jerebko get out there and, you know, do the things that we are accustomed to seeing the Swedish Larry Bird do out there. Very good game from Jerebko. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell, you know, I hate for this to be true, but you got to, you know, you kind of want to get out ahead of the narrative. And I think that, you know, this is something that we're going to talk about. I mean, if Jason Tatum wants to be, you know, the best rookie drafted in 2017, you know, he just he got outplayed by Donovan Mitchell tonight. Now, I know those guys are not, you know, they're not, it's not a matchup. They're not going head to head, but, you know, the lights were bright tonight on Donovan Mitchell with a lot of the Utah Jazz stars going down, and he rose to the occasion alongside, you know, Rubio and Hood. And, you know, I got to say that that's just a really, really impressive game from Donovan Mitchell. Did any of the other like Jazz players stick out to you, Andrew, or do you, any thoughts on, you know, what the Jazz were able to do tonight?
I mean, I think they're just scrappy. I've liked Rodney Hood for a while. I think he's a very underrated guy. Shows that tonight with 17 and 5, and it was extremely efficient too, 6 of 14 in only 30 minutes played. So I've liked Hood for a while. He kind of showed that tonight. But Utah has some good depth. I mean, Ingles obviously gave them 12 points, and he gives you the great defense as well. And he only needs 7 shots to give you those 12 points. So, I mean, they have a lot of depth. And if Favors and Gobert had played, I mean, I think that the Jazz could have even taken it to us more. And it's kind of funny when you look at the standings in the West entering this game. Utah was just they were a game and a half or a full game. I don't know the exact, but I know they were in the 9th spot, spot out of the Thunder, who are in the 8th spot in the West right now if the postseason started today. And, I mean, for Utah to have this much talent and not even technically be in the playoff picture yet in the West, it just shows how the West is loaded, but also how this Jazz team has a lot of good talent. And I think if the Celtics kind of took them, underestimated them, and once those guys went down, instead of putting the pedal to the gas, they kind of put it on the brake for whatever reason tonight, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that we've seen the Celtics, you know, this is sort of becoming a pattern. You know, another narrative I kind of predict emerging out of this game, I'm big on, you know, taking a look at, you know, what is going to be the media narrative? What are people going to be talking about, you know, in the days coming for this game? You know, here on the post-game show, you know, we want to get out ahead of the zeitgeist. We got the first word, and we want it to be, you know, about as close to the last word as you can get. So, something the Celtics maybe have to, you know, sort of look at now is, were they, playing above their head a little bit during that 16-game win streak? I mean, we've seen the Celtics, slow and steady descent for their point differential. Pretty recently, they were still, I think, third or fourth in the NBA in point differential. But after tonight, they're probably going to fall down to, somewhere around fifth. And I just think that, we got to start, maybe realizing that, a team that loses an all-star small forward 5 minutes into their first game, maybe it's not realistic to expect them to win 60 games, with two rookie starters and, with the injuries, especially if they do not, stay as healthy, and the Celtics, certainly haven't been healthy so far this year. I mean, am I too far out ahead of myself, Andrew? Do you think that I'm saying something like ridiculous here talking about that?
I mean, look, I don't want to overreact too much. I think it's one of those things too, that Kyrie, even though the stat line, you look, oh, that's Kyrie, 33 points, 6 assists, 4 boards. You're like, wow, that was a pretty good game, 11 of 25 shooting. He missed some easy layups. Horford's 21, 7 and 6 didn't feel like that strong. It kind of felt like he was quiet. He missed some bunnies. So I really, and then obviously the two young guys, I know you meant Jaylen Brown's a second year guy earlier when you're talking about him and Tatum as the, as a rookie, but, I think they were just off in total. And at the very end, Mike Gorman said it best, the Jazz just played better. So I don't want to overreact and say, oh, the Celtics aren't a representation of what their record is. I think that it's very normal for any team, especially with as many young guys as they do play with Brown and Tatum, obviously, and then having Semi and Tice B, two guys that are technically rookies, and having all these young guys, especially like Larkin as well, you're going to hit rough patches. And, I mean, this is one of those games that I think hopefully in the years to come, with when Hayward's back and you have the maturation of Tatum and Brown, that these are games that the Celtics would never lose, a game after being off last night, coming in on a Friday night to your home floor and not losing to a team you're much better than. But I think that's just the reality of having a younger team sometimes, Sam. And I mean, I if you said through 31 they're 24-7 after losing Hayward, I think that is a completely okay and over exceeding expectations record. I think it's just a bummer because they started so hot. So
the Celtics are, a very hot team coming in. Something else that was, interesting, especially, with this Celtics loss today, a team that does not have the Celtics point differential problems, they are our neighbors to the north, the Toronto Raptors. And I think that, I want to kind of talk about the Raptors because I don't see anyone talking about the Raptors much. And they have a very impressive 8.2 point differential, which is pretty much good for third in the NBA, but, behind the Red Hot Rockets and the, this little team known as the Golden State Warriors. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of them. I think they could be good though. But the Raptors, third place, currently 19-8, but with that 8.2 point differential, much better than, Cleveland's 3.7 or even the Celtics, 5.4. So, I think we've seen bear out that point differential tends to be a much better indicator of, where a team is at than record, because record can be noisy. Teams can get lucky in close games and, they can, just things like that. The point differential tends to be a much better indicator of how strong a team is. And I think that this Raptors team, I think people, kind of have forgotten about them. They've, they're a little bit slept on because this is a team that I think most people thought were stagnating. They were, struggling to re-sign Kyle Lowry this summer. It seemed to bring the gang back. But what people have ignored about this Raptors team is they've held on to their draft picks. They have not done what other teams have done, and every trade deadline, flipping a pick here and a pick there to get just this extra help on the wing. They've made a lot of their picks. With guys like DeLon Wright, Jakob Poeltl was a very high draft pick for them. a couple of years ago. And then, you know, they seem to have really found something in OG Anunoby, who's just been, you know, one of the floor stat gods for this year. And, you know, really seems like a guy that if I had a vote would definitely make the all rookie team. Andrew, I mean, what do you think about the Toronto Raptors? Because they're a team, I think all Celtics fans, and, you know, understandably, and I probably correctly so, have pretty firmly have their eyes trained on the Cleveland Cavaliers. But I'm not so sure that the Celtics should be so hasty as to, you know, look past a potential 2 or 3 seed in the Raptors that could be a very, very dangerous out.
No, I mean, I don't know how to put this without sounding like disrespectful. I think that the Raptors are obviously no, and not to you, Sam, to like just the Raptors, because I mean the Raptors have a lot of.
You're gonna have the Raptors soccer moms after you.
No, seriously, man. No, Drake's gonna call in and say, scream at me. But no, and Sam, in all seriousness, man, I mean, to me, that I just don't get why the Raptors can't get over that hump, and it's been the same thing for a while, man. I equate the Raptors with those Paul George, Roy Hibbert, Lance Stephenson Pacers teams that always tried to beat the Heat and never could. It's just with the Raptors, their ceiling is what it is. They're going to produce during the regular season. DeMar DeRozan's going to get 23 to 25 a game. Kyle Lowry's going to be a nice piece. They're going to have some bigs like Valanciunas and Ibaka or whoever else they've had in the past, the good bigs they've had in the past, like Patterson, who used to play for them. They've had guys in the past that are good, but it's just you know what they are, and they're gonna win the first round, whether they play a team like the Pacers or the Pistons or the Heat or whoever ends up in that spot. And it's just their ceiling almost to the point that, like, even though Philly's record and I don't have the point differential stuff in front of me, Sam, if you want to tell me what Philly's point differential is, but to me, like, those are the teams, like the Phillies of the world and the Pistons of the world, they are the teams that have a higher ceiling to me, and they're such a mystery that, like, if the Celtics played them in a playoff matchup, I'd be more worried about. But with the Raptors, like, you know that you're gonna, like, be able to handle them, and it's gonna take 6 or 7 games because they're good, but, like, they're not gonna do those extra things. They're not the Cavs of the world, and they're not. I like John Wall a lot better than I do the John Wall Bradley Beal combo a lot better than I do Lowry and DeRozan if you're comparing backcourt. So that's for me personally, but that's not for that's obviously arguable, but that's just kind of how I view the Raptors, to answer your question.
Yeah. Yeah, that the Philly team currently, a little bit surprisingly, actually in the negative, about -0.3 differential, just a little bit behind the Bucks, who are fourth with a negative 0.2. Those are the only two teams in the top nine with a negative point differential. But, you know, I think, you know, Andrew, because I agree. I would have agreed with you last year. I think last year I had very little fear of this this Raptors team. You know, I think if the Celtics had seen them in the playoffs, they would have been able to, you know, handle them. You know, I think it might have been closer than a lot of Celtics fans might have realized. I mean, they were playing some pretty good ball at the end of the year. But I guess just what I'm very nervous about with this Raptors team is, you know, it might seem like they haven't changed much. But, you know, they've gotten, like, some guys who are making some big impacts for them. You know, in C.J. Miles has, you know, really been a good find for them. You know, they still have Norman Powell on that squad. And just these young guys, I don't think you can underestimate how, you know, people so often forget about draft picks, guys that are, you know, highly, highly regarded draft picks coming out, because they're usually – just don't do well. Young guys just don't play well. Not everyone's Jason Tatum or Donovan Mitchell. Like, lot of times young guys. Yes, absolutely not. And, you know, these guys coming out, you know, I think we're seeing some of these guys, you know, the Raptors never really mortgaged their future because, you know, Masai Ujiri is a very good GM. And I think that we're seeing, you know, a Raptors team sort of, I don't know. Maybe I'm on an island here. I just want to throw that out there. But I think I'm watching the Raptors, and I know that I do not want to see them in a second round matchup. I would much rather have the Washington professional basketball team or the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah, you know, as disrespectful as that may be to Giannis. Now, if Washington trades for Boogie Cousins or something like that, I'm out.
that'd be scary.
No, thank you. Yeah, I want nothing to do with any of that stuff. All right, folks. So we're going to be just a reminder tonight, we're going to be entering third of our hour. We're going to open up the call lines in a little bit. So remember to dial in toll three. You're going to be 347-215-7771. That's going to be the phone call. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back in just a second, right after this break.
There had never been a sneaker brand founded in Brooklyn, which was really surprising. Like, everything came from here at one point, but never a sneaker company. So here we are. For value and quality, and we're able to offer a premium quality product at a value price by not wholesaling. It was becoming really clear that the model of traditional wholesale was completely broken, and basically because of the inefficiency, the customer pays more money than they need to. So we have two categories, made in Italy and made in Asia. And made in Asia is more sporty, younger, more accessibly priced, and made in Italy is more luxury. We call it accessible aspiration. We use the same factories, the same material providers, the same sole providers as all the luxury brands do. There's one region in Italy where most of the luxury sneakers are made. We make it in that area.
This shoe, the upper is premium Italian leather. I mean, it comes from some of the best suppliers in the country. And then we line it with what is called vicheta calf. And vicheta calf is what Chanel makes their bags out of. So actually the lining is more expensive than the leather, which is crazy. And when we went to the factories and we're like, oh, we want to line the whole thing in vicheta calf, they're like, what? That's kind of what luxury brands do. And we're like, yeah, we know. And they were like, yeah, but you want to price it at this. And I'm like, yeah, but this is how we're going to do it. I know if we cut these things in half, every other one of our competitors that sells it for $500 is going to basically have the exact same level of material, except this one's going to be $200. And the simplicity of that sounds like that can't be, because we're so told the more you pay, the better it is. And that may have been true at some point, but today it's not. And this is kind of proof of that. I mean, there's pros and cons to doing things the way we do it. The pros are we get to give you guys a better product for less. The cons are, it's hard to get more people aware of your brand when you're just one website. By not selling to a retailer, we literally are saving you at least half. Our business couldn't exist without the internet. The internet is a distribution channel. You can make things and sell it. And if you do that, and that's the majority of your business, and you're not relying on third-party retailers, then you can have a super disruptive business, whatever you're selling. So the internet is the reason. All of those things, man, have changed the world and allow greats to be greats.
Okay, folks, welcome back. The Celtics post-game show. Again, we're recapping Celtics-Jazz, the final score of that game. Not a great one for the Boston Celtics, 107-95. Celtics, taking the class a little bit by the, Utah Jazz. That saw a lot of injuries. Saw both Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert go down. The Tice man cometh, Daniel Tice, also, got popped in the mouth and was, bleeding a little throughout the game. We're going to get to your calls in just a little bit. We got a couple callers on the line. Just before we get to them real quick, Andrew, I want to get one last take for you from you before we hit up our calls. What do you think is, going forward, let's say that who do you think is going to be the Celtics' most important bench player going forward for this team? I mean, I think that, I'm actually going to nix Marcus Smart because I feel like he is the easy answer. to end up, you know, just talking about Marcus Smart. But who of the other bench players do you feel like is going to need to be the one who makes sure that these, you know, 8 minute stretches where there's no field goals don't happen? Because that, you know, that's really how the Celtics are losing a lot of these games.
I mean, genuinely, like, you have to look at Terry Rozier then, because if you can't let me say Marcus, which I totally understand why, because Marcus is almost a pseudo starter with the minutes he plays. It has to be Terry, because he goes in there and he's supposed to go in there, play his good D, but get buckets. You need him to give you 8 to 10 to 12 points, and it's one of those things that when he hasn't done that lately, tonight I think it was a minus 19 he had with, hold on, let me just get it up quick, I'm sorry, hold on. I don't want to say the wrong stats. He had exactly, Rozier, yeah, he had a point, and he was minus 16, sorry, not minus 19. So minus 16 tonight, 1 point from Terry Rozier. You need him. Say that again?
I just said, ooh, I was reacting.
Those are
outhouse plus minus is what we call that one. Ooh, my.
Right, yeah, he was nowhere to be found tonight. You don't even know if he played in the game because of how much he didn't impact it. And it's just frustrating because you know that he has the potential to go out there and give you big buckets and just be that kind of Kyrie of the second unit who has the ball in his hands and produces. And if he's not going to do that, I think it's going to be a tough stretch because the Celtics do play now 5 of the next 6 nights, so.
Yep, and it's going to be
four of the next six nights.
I mean, that's still either way.
Pretty
brutal, and I think they're in the they're just starting out at 3-4 right now. All right, callers, we're going to open up the call lines. So remember, you can dial in anytime 347-215-7771, and give your takes, air your grievances, whatever it may be. And just remember this episode is sponsored by Greats, makers of the all-time greats, the classic, stylish, and comfortable sneaker that is sold at a great price. Not just good price, a great price. We got a special deal for our audience. You're going to save 15% on your first offer with the offer code Celtics Roundtable. You're just going to visit greats.com, G-R-E-A-T-S, greats.com. Use that offer code Celtics Roundtable and get yourselves maybe a little looser slip on and, keep yourself looking fresh. So I'm going to open up the call lines, and one of the first people I'm going to go to, I've worked with him many a time on these very broadcasts. He's got some great takes, and I'm hoping he's going to come out firing tonight. Nick Sesento. Nick, what did you think of, that – I don't even know what you want to call it, that performance that the Celtics laid out there tonight?
Well, it was a joke, and what's up, Sam? What's up, Bino? It's good to hear from both of you guys. It's absolutely a joke, and the irony of it is a few shows back, Snotty, Drippin, I believe Bobby was another one of the hosts. It was Snotty, Joe Sway, and I. We had kind of like a little roundtable situation. Joe Sway had some technical difficulties and jumped in after Snotty and I started the show. And it ended up being a roundtable discussion, and one of the callers brought up a fantastic question on basically, do we foresee the Boston Celtics falling down to earth and having some trouble, going forward with their schedule and maybe, having a rough stretch where they go on either a losing streak or have some, situation where their overall record kind of takes a hit. And my response at that time was looking at, much has been made of the, 12 games and 18 nights or whatever it's been, these games between now or the past few games and, the new year, all these games that are coming up. And I, my response was, there's so much youth and inexperience on this team that it is, it's possible to happen. It's likely to happen. Jason Tatum isn't going to remain hot for, the entire season shooting the way that he was shooting because he's still a rookie. He still has the opportunity to come back down to earth. I think Jaylen Brown, as much as we've grown some expectations for him, also has had, inconsistent nights. I mean, he had, 26 points, I believe, 2 nights ago, and then, comes up with 6 points in 32 minutes on 3 of 8 shooting tonight. you know, these things just can't happen. And we've noticed in multiple games, I believe just before you guys went to break and then took the calls, you were talking about these long stretches of minutes where there's no field goals. And, you know, that kind of stuff just can't happen. There's enough talent on this team. I know there's injuries. Marcus Morris is out, and he's the one guy I think that, you know, you'd put on the bench that you can depend on to make baskets. He may take some shots that, you know, seem to be difficult shots to make, shots that you may not want him to take, but he, for the most part, in his few games that he's played for the Boston Celtics, has made those shots and has given a pretty decent offensive lift. But the only job that these backup players have to do is just not lose, you know, what the starters have attained, you know, what the starters have put forward. I didn't catch the entire game tonight, so I can't, you know, tell you whether or not the Boston Celtics had a lead at any point in the game, and then the bench players lost it. But there really wasn't much coming from the bench. As much as I like Semi Ojeleye can't be, you know, your leader off the bench. He's just not, you know, that guy. Semi and Shane Larkin did a decent job. If I were to answer the question that you just posed to Rubino, it would be, I think Shane Larkin is probably that guy, because when the Boston Celtics have needed him, he's stepped up and he's made big shots, he's made big plays, and he's made things happen in minimal playing time. I don't think Marcus Smart is that guy, and I wouldn't even say that he's even the easy answer, because I know I've been hard on Marcus Smart for so long, for seasons it seems. But when you have a guy that plays 33 minutes, which was the third most minutes behind Kyrie Irving's 37 and Al Horford's 34, to have Marcus Smart play 33 minutes and score only 6 points on 3 for 13 shooting and 0 for 3 on three point shooting, that just can't happen regardless of what else he does in the box score. The 5 assists are nice, the 2 steals are nice, but they're negated by 2 turnovers that he had. There just isn't any identity when the starters on this team leave the court. And if there's only 2 players, which is what I'm looking at the box for right now, that are in double figures, which is Al Horford and Kyrie Irving, the 2 players you'd expect to have that, just can't happen. There has to be some identity on this bench. And I think we're starting to see now that, you know, there's more film on the Boston Celtics, now that there's, you know, the teams are beginning to, you know, get an idea of, you know, what the Boston Celtics are about now that they, you know, have adjusted to Gordon Hayward's injury. And, you know, they're seeing basically the strategy to defeat the Boston Celtics is basically being revealed to some of these teams. But that still doesn't make any excuse for the Boston Celtics to lose to a team like the Utah Jazz. It just does. It's inexcusable. These are the games that, on these long stretches, that the Boston Celtics have to win, that they need to win in order to maintain their top seed, or maintain, you know what I'm saying, an advantage in the Eastern Conference. And I really think, as much as a lot of fans believe that, you know, this season is just money in the bank, they're playing with house money, you know, it's because Gordon Hayward went out, you know, anything else is just, you know, it's just nice, it's just icing on the cake, because next year is going to be the year. I just don't think that you can take those things for granted. When you have lightning in a bottle, you need to capitalize on it. And this team, with the 16-game winning streak, has had lightning in a bottle. They're getting these incredible performances from Jason Tatum, incredible performances from Jaylen Brown, but some of the other players, you know, there's just something I can't explain. The only thing I'm going to chalk it up to, and the only point that I really wanted to make after watching the game, and then, you know, looking at the parts of the game that I was able to catch, I missed pretty much half the middle half of the game. But the one thing I wanted to bring up was these players that leave Brad Stevens' system and then go to other teams have really been a factor playing against the Boston Celtics. And if you look at Jonas Jerebko with his 17 points in 24 minutes, he was a significant factor for the Utah Jazz in beating the Boston Celtics. He shot 6 for 8 from the field, 2 for 3 from three-point lands, had 7 boards, 17 points. That's a performance that we know Jonas Jerebko can have, and I don't think he does. He obviously doesn't do that every single night, but I think that knowing Brad Stevens' system, having a player that knows Brad Stevens' system, that's played in Brad Stevens' system, especially one like Jonas Jerebko, who played for Brad Stevens for, I believe, 2 or 3 seasons. You go back to the Heat game that broke the 16-game winning streak. You had Kelly Olynyk literally calling out the Boston Celtics offensive sets as he was running back down the court on defense. And then, of course, there was the first the loss to the Pistons in the first meeting where, you know, Avery Bradley, of course, played several years under Brad Stevens. This is if there's any weakness in Brad Stevens' system, it's that he's still using, you know, these you know, the same plays, the same sets, the same everything. And of course, you know, that's to be expected. He's a coach, but and he has a style of play and he has a system that he's designed. But I really think when you watch these players that used to play for him come out and have significant impacts on these type of games, Brad Stevens has to find a way to, you know, mix things up to disguise some of what he's doing, maybe come up with some new strategies or something that can, you know, offset what these guys are doing, because there's no way Jonas Jerebko on a team like the Boston Celtics should score 17 points against this defense, which, by the way, has been, you know, steadily dropping since the 16-game win streak.
All right, Nick, I was with you that whole time, but I will not stand here and have the Swedish Larry Bird disparaged on a post-game show like that. Jonas Jerebko.
No,
Jonas Jerebko could have had 40 tonight. I you know, there wouldn't have been anything the Celtics could have done. They could have had Scottie Pippen out there tonight, and it wouldn't have done anything. He was out there, you know, facilitating, looking great while doing it. I mean, look, the dude is a gamer, literally. So I will not stand for Jonas Jerebko slander on this program, but
it's not slander though, Sam. It's not slander because I love Jonas Jerebko as much as anybody else when he was playing for the Boston Celtics. It's more, if anything, it's more a slight criticism. If there's anything to be criticized about Brad Stevens, it's the fact that these guys that played for him, and that's logical. It makes sense. The guys that played for somebody for several years would know the guy's system. But that's up to Brad to then, you know what I mean, adjust for that and not allow Jonas Jerebko, as good of a player as he is, to come in and drop 17 on you and do it in only 24 minutes and in such an efficient way. I mean, there has to be some way to neutralize that. In losing a game to the Jazz, 107 points, what happened to the defense from the number one ranked defense from the beginning of the season? What happened to that?
Yeah, I see. I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't necessarily think it's a byproduct of Brad's system going stale. I think what the real answer is here is that Brad Stevens makes his players too good. So, and I think that he's just sending them, you know, pretty soon, you know, after Brad's, you know, got a Popovich like tenure in the league, you know, it'll just be all players that Brad Stevens has coached, and no one will have any chance of hanging in the league with all of these, you know, super soldiers that Brad Stevens has molded and sent out into the league. I'm joking, of course, but I do think, you know, I'd like to get Andrew's kind of take on some of this stuff too, but the, you know, I do think that it's an interesting point. I know I like to put your chops about you busting Marcus Smart's chops, but I mean, 3-for-13 tonight. And, you know, and I think that there's something to be said for, you know, him sort of being, you know, the homeman's Rajon Rondo, in that, you know, he amplifies the skills of people he plays with. This is, you know, a big proponent of why I think Marcus should be, you know, starting these games when they're not going big with Baines, because I think he does play better, you know, with the starters, and, you know, the numbers back that up. But when he is charged with, you know, helming a second unit, like, he's running a correct offense, but there's just no talent. And Marcus Smart doesn't necessarily have scoring talent. So if he doesn't have anyone he can amplify around him, you know, it just sort of negates Marcus Smart, and you're just putting him out there with minutes to just eat negatives. I mean, am I crazy, Andrew? What's your take on this?
I mean, I understand the criticism. I just think it's tough to say that, like, to point to the only – to say that, like, a huge problem is that all these guys that used to play for Brad are cooking us are cooking the Celtics when they face them again. I mean, there's problems larger than that. I mean, it's one of those things that the Celtics really need to, number one, figure out their bench scoring, when Marcus Morris obviously is a bigger. I mean, if you have to say one thing about this team, most people would say, oh, Marcus Smart would be the MVP of the bench for the Celtics team, right? Like, any casual fan would think that. But with Marcus Morris being out so far, like, in this, I want to say, two-ish week stretch that he's been held out, it's showing without him in there, he's way more important than I think some people are. And I know Morris doesn't start every single time he's out there, but whether you want to call him a bench guy or whatever, I mean, Morris is more important on this team than people are giving him credit for, because all the credit in the world goes to Kyrie and Horford, and rightfully so in some aspects. But I think that the Celtics are hurting without Morris, and I think also, too, that they're hurting when Jaylen Brown has been pretty inconsistent. I mean, he had 26 against Denver on Wednesday, but then you go to a game against the Bulls that the Celtics really needed him to step up, and he only has 13 points in a game when you have Kyrie take a rest. So I think that the two things that are important to me are everybody besides Kyrie and Horford hitting kind of this like middle, or excuse me, after the first quarter of the season, almost the honeymoon is over, the streak's over, and now they really need to figure out who's going to be like consistent for them, because besides Kyrie and Horford, it's been is it Jaylen tonight? Is it Jason Tatum tonight? Oh, Terry comes off the bench, Marcus comes off the bench. Like, somebody needs to give consistency, and it can't be like whose night it is, because they're not going to be the number one seed if there's no consistency. So.
If I could bring up one other point, and it's not to harp on Marcus Smart, but just one other point real quick. There were five players from the Utah Jazz that scored in double figures. And of those five players that scored in double figures, three of them were backcourt players. Ricky Rubio torched the Boston, torched the Celtics for 22 points. Donovan Mitchell, I mean, am I missing something? Who is Donovan Mitchell? You know, scored 17 points on the Boston Celtics backcourt. And then you had Rodney Hood, who, I mean, again, 17 points on well, 6 for 14 isn't fantastic. But these guys all together combined for, let's see, 56 points. Where was the defense in the backcourt? You know what I'm saying? Like, Marcus Smart, Marcus Smart's signature is his defense. But he wasn't able to stop any of those guys from scoring double figures and putting up big points. And on top of that, looking at their three-point shooting, 52% from three. Where were the closeouts? Where was the defense on the perimeter? That's Marcus Smart's specialty, and it didn't happen tonight. And if he's not going to give you the scoring, if he's going to go 3-for-13 on offense, and then on the other end, not going to shut down either Ricky Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, or Rodney Hood, what is he doing? I mean, I love the energy. I love the hustle angle. I love, you know, the heart and the grit and all that stuff angle. But you have to give something tangible at some point to make the guy worth, you know, the $12 million contract that he's probably going to get in free agency that the Boston Celtics will have to match. He has to provide something tangible, and I just don't think he can. I really prefer Terry Rozier running the offense, because if he rebounds just as well as Marcus Smart, because he has that Louisville style of backcourt, you know, crashing the boards. But then he'll take the ball and he'll go straight to the basket, and if he doesn't find somebody open, he'll go to the basket and finish himself. That's one thing that Marcus Smart cannot do. He does not go coast to coast and score off, you know what I'm saying, a rebound that he grabs himself. He doesn't have the speed to challenge those defensive players, to beat them down the court, and he doesn't have the finishing ability to do that. You put Terry Rozier, give him those minutes, I think Terry Rozier might be a little bit more productive. And I really think, in my humble opinion, and I'll finish this on that I really think when Gordon Hayward comes back next year, that Marcus Smart is going to be the odd man out. As much as fans may hate that, I really think that that's going to be... Call it a hot take if you want, but I've been saying it for a long time, and I really think that's what it's going to be. I think the starting lineup next year, Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, and that's a superstar lineup right there.
It's a spicy take, at least. And, I mean, on your point about backcourt scoring, I mean, we got, coming up, Monday, December 18th, Victor Oladipo. That would have been that would have gotten me laughed off this broadcast, just last year. But Victor Oladipo, you know, very likely an all-star in the East this year. The Celtics better be ready for that, because this is a Pacers team that is well coached and they are not messing around. Don't want to look past the Memphis Grizzlies tomorrow night, as much as reeling as they may be. Any final thoughts before we let you go, Nate?
No, just once again, maybe it's overstated, but I do think that having a player that knows Brad Stevens' system is an advantage for those teams. But all things aside, you just don't give up, 108 points to the Utah Jazz tonight. You just don't give up that many points, 107 points, to a team that's not even a playoff team, or at least a seeded, you know, thus far a ranking team, a top eight team in the Western Conference. And a team that was, prior to tonight, 2-10 on the road against a team, the Boston Celtics, that was 13-2 at home. It just doesn't make any sense. And I think overall in general, the one thing that we can say is the fact that the Boston Celtics have to depend so heavily on young, inexperienced players who are prone, just out of their inexperience, to be inconsistent, like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, you know, Terry Rozier. When they have to rely on those guys to, you know, to pick it up and, you know, pick up the slack and fill in the scoring, that shows you what happens. You know, when they have bad nights, the Boston Celtics aren't going to win because there's nobody else, especially with Marcus Morris out, there's nobody else that's going to pick up the scoring and actually put the ball in the hoop. Marcus Smart can do everything else, but if he's not, you know, stopping anybody on defense and he's not putting the ball in the hoop, it starts to become a detriment, I think. I think those 3-for-13, I think he could have gone, you know, 3-for-10 maybe, or 3-for-8, you know what I mean, and saved those shots for somebody else and tried to get somebody else involved instead of, you know, chucking the ball up. Or maybe just focus entirely on his defense and not worry about trying to score. But 3-for-13, how many nights does he have to have like that before we finally say, you know, enough is enough, just stop. You know what I mean? Just don't chuck so much. If any other player on this team did that, we would be criticizing them. But there's just something about Marcus Smart that I think Boston Celtics fans just have this, you know, this emotional appeal about him. And I think he's blue collar. He's blue collar, and that's why Boston Celtics fans love him, because they love guys that show all that heart. But this is a new age of basketball, and you got to have somebody that's either going to really shut it down on defense, you know, the way Avery Bradley did, or that's going to light it up on offense. And I don't think Marcus Smart is good enough at either at this point. At least he's not showing it, you know, effectively to really anchor a team as the guy in the second unit, or the guy that's basically the transitional player between the second unit and the first in the starting lineup. I just don't see it. I put a lot of this on the inconsistency of the young players, and a lot of this on the fact that Marcus Smart just isn't developing after almost 4 years in the league, just hasn't got there yet.
All right, Nick. I think you know how like KD had those burner accounts. You know, you're gonna have people thinking you're Marcus Smart's burner account just for how much love you keep pouring on him. Marcus Smart burner account. Thanks for taking my call.
Nick. I appreciate it though.
Okay. All right, take care, Nick. Yeah, that was Nick Sesento, frequently. Man behind the glass here tonight. I mean, what do you think, Adrian? I'm a unabashed Marcus Smart stan, so I will always, you know, kind of rib Nick a little bit about Marcus Smart, because I think he's a great player. And I think that you just kind of you know, I think he's, you know, sort of like a prism where you know, you got to have someone shining a bright light behind him to really get that rainbow effect with Marcus Smart. But what is your, are you with me? Do you tend to side more with Nick? Cause I know this is a divisive topic in Celtics circles.
No, I'm with you, Sam. I think that Marcus is extremely important to this team. I mean, and look, I get Nick was complaining about how well the Jazz's backcourt was playing tonight, but it's not like Smart can guard all three guys. I mean, he's doing different assignments, and just to say too, there were points in the game where Smart was playing good defense on Donovan Mitchell. I mean, Donovan Mitchell was averaging 25 a game in his last 9 games coming into the game, and he only scored 17. And besides that crazy 10-point fourth quarter, 10-point fourth quarter, he didn't have like a crazy game, and Marcus was playing good defense on him. I mean, I remember at one point you thought Donovan Mitchell was going to go up and dunk, and Marcus got a really good block on him that was then called a foul, and it was kind of a bad call. But anyways, the point is, I mean, I saw Donovan Mitchell play in person live last year. Louisville came to Syracuse University and played, and I saw the game live with another CLNS media member, Bobby Manning, and we were both impressed with how just athletic, sneaky athletic Mitchell is. I mean, he's only 6'3", 6'4". He jumps out the gym, and tonight I was like, uh-oh, Mitchell's is going to posterize Marcus, and Marcus is just that tough guy. I mean, he's so strong, he's so tough, and to make a block on a kid like Mitchell that's that young, he's that good, he's the rookie everybody's talking about besides the besides Tatum and Simmons. So, I mean, I think that there's points in the game where I thought Marcus was playing well, and I really didn't see, like, it was kind of funny to look at the box score after the game and see that he put shot 3 of 13 because, like, he didn't seem like he was taking too many shots. I don't know, for whatever reason, some nights he, like, takes, like, back-to-back-to-back threes, and you're like, what are you doing, Marcus? But tonight wasn't one of those nights, so I don't know. I think with any player that's a bench guy, especially in a big city like Boston or New York where there's a huge spotlight, whether it be the Knicks or the Celtics, when a team's good, I mean, you're going to have more criticism. If Marcus Smart was on a good team that wasn't in such a big of a market, I think people would have even more of high praise for him. I think that Celtics media people and just the Boston media in general love to hop on and give Marcus Smart a hard time because he's a unique guy. Like Nick said, he is blue-collar and he plays a great but a different brand of basketball. But every championship-level team, Nick, needs that Dennis Rodman, needs that Ben Wallace, needs that now current modern day Draymond Green. So you can't tell me that the Celtics don't view Marcus Smart in that way and he wouldn't be important. And I agree with Nick. When Gordon Hayward comes back, I do think that Marcus won't play in crunch time as much. But if you don't think that Marcus Smart, if the Celtics want to win a championship, is going to be just as important with his grit and his toughness and the stuff that he does other than maybe sometimes shooting a low field goal percentage, I think that but people are out of their minds if they don't think that he's important. So that's my take, and I've continued to have that take. And I don't know, just tell me if I'm way too off and you think that I'm kind of just too loving of Marcus, but I can get over the 3 of 13 like tonight for all the other stuff he does.
Hey, man, I'd donate, you know, both my kidneys to Marcus Smart. And, you know, I know that I need him to live. So, like, I took anatomy classes. I know what happens if I don't have kidneys. So,
yeah.
You know, I'll donate them both to Marcus. He can have four, sure. He doesn't even really need to have them, you know. He doesn't really need them. There'll just be a package on his doorstep and be like, what's this? Oh, Sheehan's kidneys. That's cool. Folks, we got time for one more caller tonight. We got someone who's been hanging in the whole show. We're going to throw to a 207 number. We got no call screener today, so I'm just going to throw to you live. So who do we got calling? A fellow Mainer on the 207 number.
It's Blair from Maine.
Hey, Blair, how you doing, man? Good to hear from you.
Last night I didn't get on, so it's good to hear from you guys.
Yeah, what did you see in the game tonight?
It was not good. The second quarter, 0-for-14, I believe it was. We really, really, really struggled in the second quarter. The second quarter, we really, really struggled. Then the third, I believe, we tried to pick it up, but we couldn't because the Jazz, Rubio, and Jericho, is it? Those
Jarebko.
Two players were playing what?
Jarebko,
Jarebko, yeah.
I like Jericho, though, too. Very biblical.
I don't see the players' names ever right. Sorry.
Uh-huh. No, you're good. You're good. But,
playing pretty good. There's another one you mentioned, Mitchell is his name, I believe.
Yes, Donovan Mitchell.
He was that whole team could play. I mean, if they're ranked for the NBA rankings, if they were ranked number 8 or 10, I could see, but tonight they beat us. They outbeat us on scoring because we were not shooting well in the second quarter, and that's when they took the lead from us. So I was like, how do we lose to this team? Well, if we look at the shooting, if we look at the box score what matters. And if you look at the second quarter and the box score, I believe that's what's going to prove why we lost. And if we can get by tomorrow night at 9:00, if we could get by, it's probably going to be past 9, the second quarter, if we could ever get by the second quarter tomorrow night, then we'll be fine. But if we do what we did in the second quarter tomorrow night against Memphis in Memphis, we're gonna have another loss. That won't be good. But we cannot let the team behind us, which is, I believe, I can't think of them, but I know because you mentioned them tonight.
Cleveland Cavaliers breathing right down the Celtics' neck coming up here.
Yeah, but who's the team in our conference right behind us?
And also the Raptors are also
The Raptors. They could come right behind us and take first.
Yeah.
You never know. That's why we got to try to win more games than them to keep in first and be the first place team. Because if you're ranked at least number three, and I know if you're ranked number three, you for sure get the first four games at, well, not the first four, but you get the first two at home, and then you have to play two away, and then you get another, I think, two at home again. Yep. I don't know how it works.
2-2-1-1-1 format.
Playoff games at home. First two playoff games at home, if we can be ranked number two in the for the playoffs for the NBA.
I'm with you, Blair. I think that's the ticket. So we're getting down here to the end of the show. Do you have any other thoughts before we let you go?
We got to get past tomorrow in the second quarter. Tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, we got to get past that game in the second quarter against Memphis. If I'm watching the game, we don't get past that second quarter, that might be another loss. If we can, I mean, it's not just the second quarter. We just got to beat Memphis straight out. If we don't beat Memphis, we have another, because we have seven losses right now, right?
Seven losses. Yeah, seven. And this is a
so
Memphis team that is really.
Let's not have eight. Let's try to make it through the new year without 10. Without 10 would be nice before the new year. We don't need two more losses.
Yep.
So we got to beat Memphis the Wizards, too. Hey, real quick, we have the Wizards for Christmas. We don't want to lose on Christmas to the Wizards, to the Washington Wizards on Christmas. How bad of a Christmas would it be if we lost to Washington Wizards?
It'd make me a little Scroogey, for sure. That's the lump of coal in the stocking, for sure.
Yeah, that would Blair, that wouldn't make me happy playing my new PS4 at home, at my new house.
That would be
opening
the switch,
gifts and all that, and watching them lose, you know, in the, whatever time they play for Christmas. That would not be a great Christmas, losing to Washington Wizards. For the Celtics.
Enough to make it turn any of us into a Scrooge, I think. Blair, we appreciate the call, man. Thanks for calling in, as always.
Thank you. You guys are the best.
All right. Take care, man. Okay. That was Blair from Maine. Andrew, with you. Are you with Blair? Do you think that if the Celtics can just get through some of these these droughts, these third quarter these second quarter swings? I would extrapolate that a little bit to maybe sort of include these the third quarter woes that they've also been having. But what are you with him on that? That you think this is a reeling Grizzlies team. The Celtics are catching tomorrow. Something ridiculous, like they've lost like 17 of 18 or something like that. So you got to think the Celtics are going to be able to beat them. But again, they lost to the Bulls, so anything is possible. I mean, what do you think?
The scariest thing is the fact that it's a back-to-back and it's on the road and they're going to have a sour taste in their mouth from tonight. But hopefully they respond. But, it's respond positively. But since they're a young team, Sam, honestly, you don't know. It could go either way, especially, like I said, with Tatum and Brown just really being inconsistent over more Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum has he's been way more consistent, but Jaylen Brown has been extremely all over the place recently. But, look, I think the biggest thing for me moving forward, Sam, is that if you look at the schedule after they play the Grizzlies tomorrow night, and hopefully that's an easy win, like you were saying, because the Grizzlies are reeling, you have very legitimate Eastern Conference teams that are either right in the thick of the playoff race or actually seeded in the playoffs if the playoffs started today. You have the Pacers, Heat, who they just lost to a couple weeks back. Then they play the Knicks, the Bulls, who they just lost to. And the Bulls obviously are the outlier in that they're not a legitimate playoff team, but they still just lost to them. And then they have the Wizards on Christmas Day. So that's an important stretch, I think, just for confidence-wise, heading into the 2018, the new calendar year, and just kind of getting confidence. They've had kind of a weird stretch, like they've kind of come back down to earth after the great win streak to start the year, and it's almost like now they're not the darlings of the league anymore. The Cavs are kind of catching up to them. It's like, oh boy. So I really think, Sam, that this big stretch of games, if they can keep it under, they can keep it to 5-1 over these next six. No worse than 4-2. I think I'd be pretty happy with that, especially considering that they're playing some tough teams. So.
I totally agree, and I think that we're gonna see the Celtics take a couple of schedule losses, a couple more at least before this thing is over. But, you know, we will see. You know, folks, once again, we want to shout out our sponsor, greats.com, for sponsoring the pod again tonight. Again, let's not forget about that 15% off code, people. You're going to go to Celtics Roundtable. That's Celtics plural, and then round, it's a shape, and you're going to go table. It's that thing that you got in your kitchen. So Celtics Roundtable, you're going to do that for 15% off at checkout. You know, they are the – you know, these guys, they're the all-time greats. That's why it's the name. It's right in the name. Greats, G-R-E-A-T-S, classic, stylish, comfortable sneakers. I got a wide selection of men's and women's shoes. It's versatile styles, it's suitable for any occasion. And you know, you can just basically get down to any one of those. And once again, thanks to them. This post game show is going to be available on demand. You're going to search CLNS Media Boston Celtics post game show on any app that you're listening on. That's Stitcher, SoundCloud, anything like that. And don't forget to check in tomorrow. We're going to be back with some of the other stuff going on. We're going to have a couple of different people in the studio. We're going to be catching that Memphis game. So keep it right here on the CLNS post game show with CLNS Media. Once again, for my co-host, Andrew Rubito, myself, Sam Sheehan, thanks so much for joining us here tonight, and good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.